BPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going to walk the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd I do? The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on,
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. This is our regular time every Tuesday morning. And we want to say thank you to Mr. Gene Y. Mr. Gene Y. Kim, who made that substantial donation to us last week. We want to thank you again, and to all the other folk who've been contributing and making donations to keep us on the air here at WPFW. And thanks to our fantastic co-host, Ms. Nikichi Taifa, who is always with us, and she has her own show, but yet she works with us every week to make sure we bring you information that you can use.
How you doing?
Good morning,
Nikichi. You look like a little teenager next to old Roach there.
Don't tell her that. I'm a geezer. You know what I mean? She got a geezer.
Go on. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go on with the show.
Okay. Oh, you can interrupt anytime you want. This is part of your show too, lady. We all been doing this for years. I want to thank you for being there with us. Now we open up at what we call the grapevine. Information that you can use. The grapevine. Here we go. Stop the Killing Summit. Make our communities a decent and safe place to live. We need 10,000 fearless men. June 15, 2024, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Malcolm X Park at 16th and Euclid Street, Northwest in Washington, D.C. There's a big summit on stopping the killing. They're doing these summits all over the city and across the country. So please, if you can, come to Malcolm X Park June 15th, this Saturday, from 10 to 8, at Malcolm X Park at 16th and Euclid Northwest. We need you there to see what we can do to help make our city safer. There's a new exhibit. This will give you a glimpse of life inside Lawton Reformatory. Counting the Days captures the monotony, terror, and claustrophobia of the hole at D.C.'s former prison. There's a lovely art center and a nice theater in the old Occoquan Workhouse, across the road from Lawton Reformatory. Some of the Lawton Reformatory's old dormitories have been turned into swanky apartments. Nearby, Alindo occupies part of the prison's old maximum security unit. And yet, despite all this new life, absent the thousands of prisoners who departed by the time the District of Columbia, the old prison complex in Lawton closed in 2001, there's still a feeling of emptiness that's hard to shake when you visit the site. That's why visitors are likely to be startled when they encounter Counting the Days, a new permanent installation in the workhouse Q block. This exhibit was filmed by a good friend of ours named Kareem Mowat, who did a film called Prison of Terror, and he co-curated the exhibition with museum staff. So please, if you get a chance, to go down to Lawton and the Occoquan, the Art Center, and you will be amazed at how and what they did to turn an old prison into an art center. And believe me, folk, it blew me away, my wife and I. Expanding the vote, state felony disenfranchisement reform, 1997 to 2023. Since 1997, 26 states in the District of Columbia have expanded voting rights to people living with felony convictions. As a result, over 2 million Americans have regained the right to vote The reform includes restoration of voting rights to persons in prison in Washington, D.C. That means while you're in the joint, you should be able to vote no matter where you're incarcerated at. Expansion of voting rights to some of all persons on felony probation or parole in 12 states. And increase accessibility for persons seeking rights restoration in 14 states. With all the election talk coming on and the election in November about the president and the city council, and these folks are running for different positions, here's your chance, folks, to make an input. And I want to say that the late Marion Barry, with former Councilman Arrington Dixon, helped get the law passed in 1979 that gave us the right to vote in Washington, D.C. And we used that vote to mobilize the returning citizens to help Marion Barry get reelected back to the office of mayor. So people, please use your vote. And if you can't vote, get your wife, your sister, your girlfriend, your grandmother, your puppy. Get everybody to vote. If you want to change some of these laws, here's one of the ways that we can have an input in it. Okay, while some states are trying to get people Medicaid before they leave prison, people leaving prisons and jails are at greater risk of illness and deaths. But for years, they couldn't use the government health insurance program. In the last decade, more states have recognized the importance of providing health insurance to those leaving prisons and jails. Recently, states and the federal government have gone even further, proposing to enroll people in Medicaid before they set foot in the free world again. People in prisons and jails tend to be sicker than the general population, and after release, are more likely to rely on expensive stopgap health care from emergency rooms. In the 2 weeks after their release, formerly incarcerated people are almost 13 times more likely to die than anyone else, most commonly from drug overdoses, heart disease, homicides, and of course, suicide. That changed in 2010 when Congress passed the Affordable Care Act. The new rules, which apply in the 40 states that took advantage of the law's new coverage, meant that anyone with zero or very low income, which is almost all incarcerated people, qualified for free or heavily subsidized government health insurance. And federal officials are experimenting with broader waivers that would allow Medicaid to cover health-related social needs like housing and food. These have emerged as part of a much broader discourse. Woo! Oh, I hope we get some action on that. And here's lastly, feds closed a prison notorious for abuse. Things only got worse. Dozens of women were assaulted at the Federal Correctional Institute in Dublin, California, before it was shut down. Now prisoners are facing mass retaliation and bullying from staff who feel that the inmates complained they should have kept their mouth shut. It's the prison where 8 correction officers, including the former warden, Ray Garcia, and the prison chaplain, were charged in federal court for sexually abusing dozens of incarcerated women. It's the highest number of correction officers to be charged with sex crimes in any federal prison in the United States. Sex abuse was so pervasive at FCI Dublin that it earned the nickname the Rape Club. The sexual abuse scandal at FCI Dublin was horrific and rampant. Deputy Attorney General at Families Against Mandatory Minimum, a national group whose mission is to create a more fair and effective justice system. But they are the canary in the coal mine. They're only unique because people started to pay attention. But sexual abuse is happening in prisons all across the country. This is not a Dublin specific issue. And lastly, doctors and nurse practitioners at Unity Healthcare say staff shortages and safety concerns at a jailhouse clinic have forced dozens to quit. The frontline doctors and nurses practitioners at the district's largest community health center say widespread staff shortages and safety concerns at clinics across the city, including the jail, have forced dozens to quit, putting their vulnerable patients at risk. Unity Healthcare workers say a grueling schedule forces them to run late or rush appointments, shortchanging patients, grappling with complex issues, and creating a chaotic environment that has led to 25 resignations since January 1 of this year. A number of the nonprofit health center disputes Providers are scheduled to see up to 24 patients in a day. The concerns drove about 150 Unity providers to form a union last winter, and they have accused management of unfair labor practices, such as not bargaining in good faith for their first contract. They are seeking more administrative time to catch up on their work and the ability to see fewer patients for longer appointments and cost of living increases. And this has been a crisis that's been going on, and you can check with Joni Eisenberg and Ambrose Lane, who's been on top of this, with the Unity Healthcare Workers and the union and the strike and the shortages over the D.C. jail and the healthcare facilities all across the city. It seems like every time we come to you, folks, there's one crisis on top of another crisis, and the situation just seems to be getting worse. Our topic for this morning is D.C. jail deaths sparks of fury. There's been over 334 deaths over the D.C. jail in Washington, D.C., and we are interested, we're concerned, and we have a young lady with us named Kiana Johnson, co-founder of Harriet's Wildest Dreams and Mama Bailout. Good morning, Kiana Johnson.
Good morning, Roach, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, and it's so good to keep having you. We keep running into you everywhere. Lady, you mommy of Nikichi. You all over the place. Every time me and my wife go somewhere, there's Kiana Johnson, there's Carmen Johnson, there's young ladies who are on the front line fighting to make things better. And my hat goes off to you. So,
Kiana Johnson, this is Nikichi here. Hi. How you doing, sis?
Hi, Nikichi. Love you so much. How
love
are you?
Love you too. And his loudest dreams. Woo-hoo.
Yes.
Storm votes.
Kiana is a mother, a daughter, a sister, an aunt, and a conductor of legal defense at Harriet's Wildest Dream. She was born in D.C., and as a formerly incarcerated person, Kiana is the founder of Life After Release, Mama's Bailout, and a new graduate of the University of Maryland University College with a bachelor's in legal studies and public safety. Right. Oh, I didn't know you was a mouthpiece, lady.
I had to get that education to see what they were talking about, you know.
Well, you got it. I mean, we need as many folk who've been inside to come outside to understand this law to see what they can do to change it. And you're on the front line. Yes. We saw you a couple of weeks ago, Kiana, with the conference that Aisha Brayboy, the state's attorney for PG County, conducted. And it was an audience I've never experienced before in my life. It was an audience of all women. It was an untold story of women who've been incarcerated. Mm-hmm. And you had some powerful women and some powerful speakers up there. And before we get any further, I'd like for you, Kiana, to open it up and just say a few words of what you shared about your history and your little brief bio over at the workshop, because it touched us. And I know you, but I didn't know you. Thank you. And let our audience get a chance to know you this morning, Kiana Johnson.
Yes. Good morning. And I don't know how many folks don't know it at this point, but I did 2.5 years of incarceration in the only women's prison in the state of Maryland. And that stay really, really changed my life. Being sentenced to incarceration really changed my life. The way I got there was through a prosecutor who was, I mean, he was the worst. I mean, it just, I never, you know, I watched a lot of judge shows and I watched a lot of Law and Order and never would I thought that this would be my experience. And that prosecutor was just so gung-ho and it just made him so happy to send me away. It was one of the highlights of his year, it seemed like. And so, you know, going through that system, and what I noticed while I was incarcerated was that it was really a very unsafe place to be. There were so many programs that had been removed. Thank God addiction wasn't a part of my story. But there were so many women that were going in and, you know, wasn't having, you know, withdrawal medication and things of that nature. It was just a very unsafe place that caused a lot of additional harm. Mm-hmm. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand what this country's main goal was to kind of, you know, create public safety by creating harm and trauma. I just couldn't understand it. And that is exactly what prison is.
And how did you get involved with law? I understand that you went to school and you were the conductor of legal defense at Harriet's Wildest Dream. What is the conductor of legal offense.
What is it? I call myself, I am not a public defender, but I am a defender of the public. Right? Okay. I am a defender.
I like that.
You hear that, Nikichi?
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to use that. That's a winner. I'm a defender of the public. Yeah.
And as a defender of the public, I use the law and I'm able to help individuals navigate the criminal legal system in many ways that a lawyer does, but I add that community kick to making sure that, you know, I let the lawyers do their job. I let them file the motions and let them do all of the things that they need to do on the front lines in the courtroom between them and the judge. But behind the scenes, when it comes to that legal work and helping that loved one, Roach, I don't know if you understand how many people go to prison each year that never seen a Dare Discovery. Don't even know what it is.
Yes, I know.
That simple, you know, being able to sit down and say, hey, look, have you seen your discovery? And they're like, what's that?
Yes.
And they're on their way to take a plea deal.
That's right. And on top of that, a lot of them never even seen the police report, the initial police report, which is the key to getting you back in court. So, go ahead.
Even and just those things, those small things. And trust me, I love my public defenders. I love my defense attorneys because I believe that they too are on the front lines. But the system is so jacked up and the way that they have it is so stacked against the public defenders and the defendant is that it's really hard for them to get their fair shot. And so, you know, having them being able to review their discovery, review that police report, I found with a loved one reviewing their police report that the police report that they got after the incident was different than the police report that was in the discovery.
Yes, yes. Have you noticed that they just started something a week or so ago in D.C., I believe, that they proposed to allow arresting officers to view the body cam before they write the initial report. Now, that is some jiggy boogie. If that ain't jiggy boogie, I eat my shoe. You know what I mean? They're going to let the police look at the video before they write the initial report so they can doctor it and correct whatever mistakes they made. And that's the when I was in prison, Kiana, the first place you go is to the law library and you go talk to the law clerk. And he said, give me the first document they want is your police initial report. Mm-hmm. And when they give you that, then they tell you whether or not you got a chance. So I went there and tried to get a habeas corpus. And the guy looked at my case and said, you don't qualify for habeas corpus. You need a habeas scapus, you know, because I had too much time. I wasn't coming out. So a habeas corpus didn't apply to me. So that police report and initial documents, I'm glad that we got somebody like you who's knowledgeable, who's been inside, who understand the legal point, because a lot of folks don't even know what they charge when they say 360 months. They think that's next week. That's 30.
Right. They don't calculate that months, what months are in terms of years. And I think that's kind of purposeful the way they do that in sentencing.
Why do you think that, Nikichi?
Because a lot of us think in terms of years. You know, we don't think in terms of just what months mean. And you hear a thing about 60 months and you're thinking 60 days, you're not thinking 5 years. You know what I'm saying?
And that hurts. Yeah. So how did you get involved with this, Kiana? We saw an article about the 32 deaths over at the D.C. jail, and I saw your picture. I said, look at her. She got all in the middle of this. This was your bailiwick too. So how did you get involved with investigating and getting involved with these 32 deaths over at the D.C. jail in Washington?
Well, what we do in the behind the scenes at Harriet's Wildest Dreams is usually when a family goes through this, they reach out to maybe the council member or someone else in the community and they point them right to Harriet's Wildest Dreams. And we usually help the families navigate that system. We help the families, you know, through their times, either hold a visual with the family or to be able to get the loved one's body. You'll be surprised how hard it is for the loved ones to get their bodies, their loved one's bodies from the jail once they deceased.
How hard is it getting the body of a deceased loved one?
It is very hard. In some cases, they have to, you know, file FOIA requests in order to get answers to questions that they want, you know, and getting that turned over. I think they have to pay a small fee in some cases. what we were told by a loved one. It is just very difficult, because what we have to understand is that your life is not your own when you're incarcerated. You don't belong to yourself. You don't belong to your mom or your dad. You belong to the government. You are now property of the government. And if you look on any the back of any uniform, it usually says government. Yes. Your property of the, you know, and that's why they give you a number, because you are now a property of the government. And so just imagine, you know, I got sick when I was incarcerated, and it was hard just to get my medication. It was hard to be seen by OBGYN. It was hard to get seen by the medical personnel. I had to wait, put in a sick call and a ticket and all these things. And the same thing is once you're deceased and you're no longer living, the family still has to go through all that red tape to now get you out of the custody of where you were once property and to return you back to a person.
You know, that what you just described describes a series of events. After you try to get the body, what happens next? Do they get any assistance in Vera? Because most of the men and women over at the jail are unemployed, no money, no income, don't have an IRA or an insurance. Who pays the cost for burying somebody who dies inside of the jail?
We have one family right now, the most recent death, that we have a GoFundMe for that family that the family has actually put out, because they're not getting any assistance from anyone. And they have to bury their loved one, you know, after they get their body back, and they're not getting any assistance, no checks, no stipends, no, you know, nothing from the jail to say, here is some support in burying your loved one. They barely get answers to their very simple questions.
Hmm. Oh, wow. This is something. So you was over to jail in this article, the string of DC jail deaths sparked fury about pretrial detention. What's your take on that?
My take is very simple, and this comes from the little bit of law background that I've been able to receive. When we're talking about being incarcerated, you are not convicted of anything when you are pretrial.
And
the majority of the individuals who are being held in DC at CTF and at the DC jail are just that, individuals who are being held pretrial, similar to the individual from the insurrection, January the 6th. The white gentleman who was being held pre-trial in the facility. This is a pre-trial facility. And so holding anyone there, we have to understand that the criminal legal process is just beginning. They're just being charged. Folks are trying to figure out, lawyers and judges are trying to, prosecutors are trying to figure out exactly what happened in this case. And no one, pre-trial should not be a death sentence. What essentially is happening is pretrial is turned into a life and death sentence for a lot of individuals who are being held at
just hell. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. What are some of the causes that they're saying? Is it medical? Is it, violence by others that are there? Or is it pre-existing conditions? Do you have any idea as to, at least from this recent spate, I think it's been 3 deaths in custody.
And that's the thing. We've asked for, we're in the process of doing FOIAs right now because we're not getting a clear answer. We're being told it's still under investigation. We're not getting clear answers from the jail. There has been speculations of everything from drug usage to people just passing out. They don't know if it's from the food. They don't know. We don't know what it is because the investigations have not been completed. And we as the public, I don't know the last time they did a press conference over at the jail to tell us exactly what was going on. That's a real top secret. That's a real top secret operation they got going on over there. And they don't really tell us what exactly is going on. And just to speak a little bit to the fact that we have the bottom line is that the individual's needs are not getting met and the public safety is not happening at the jail. That's what we know, because the evidence of that is bodies are dropping at that jail and that we're not getting any responses for it. And I don't know about you, but if a body dropped at my house when they came over here to visit me, you know, and then somebody dropped it in my house, I'm pretty sure there'll be some type of investigation, blue and red lights happening and all types of stuff going on if somebody was just to drop dead at one of our houses, you know. And this is the government's house. The people are dropping dead in the government's house and there's no response to that.
You know, what is Harriet's wildest dream? That's the organization you're connected with. What is Harriet's Wildest Dream? What is it and what do you do?
Harriet's Wildest Dreams is a Black-led defense hub, community defense hub for individuals who are at state of state-sanctioned violence. And this is state-sanctioned
violence.
People are dying at the jail. This is state-sanctioned violence. And this is why Harriet's Wildest Dreams is on the front lines of this, because this is happening. And it's being the violence here is coming from the state. It's coming from the government.
Has anybody over the jail been arrested or charged for any of the killings or deaths? I'm sorry, any of the 32 deaths over the D.C. jail? Anybody been arrested?
Not that I'm aware of. I highly doubt it. I don't even know if our council members are even aware of what's happening. We want to, you know, be able to do an open letter in conjunction with D.C. Justice Lab to the council and to some of the judges so that they understand what's going on. And if any judges happen to be listening, when you see these pretrial cases come across your desk, and you have the option to release people, that's what y'all should be doing. Because it's very evident that the government does not have the capacity to actually properly care for our loved ones who are being held. You're snatching individuals off the street, right? There's no drug treatment available to them. You're snatching folks off the street who may be in a state of addiction, and you snatch them off the street and they're not getting any proper step downs or any proper medications to take them, to wean them off of a drug. The inevitable that's going to happen is that person is probably going to die during the withdrawal process.
You know, and that impacts the health. I don't know if you're familiar with Estelle versus Gamble. This is a Supreme Court decision where the Supreme Court ruled that the only people in society who was guaranteed free medical care are people incarcerated. So if you get a chance, check out Estelle versus Gamble. And because this is a constitutional right that's not being enforced or adhered to, men and women are dying, like I said, over the jail and upon their release. And they have a constitutional right to have access to free Medicare. And this ties into, I don't know if you've been involved in this, but the issue about Unity Healthcare, who has a contract to provide medical services over the D.C. jail in several community centers. The staff are resigning. They're quitting. They said it's a toxic environment. Folks are not getting the proper care, treatment, medication. It's a whole list of issues, and they've been trying to organize with a union to represent the workers at Unity Healthcare. Are you familiar with this particular piece?
And before she answers, I just want to say, attorney and counselor at law, Roach Brown, thank you for that Supreme Court dissertation there about Estelle versus Gamble. I said, all right, ma'am, you've been in those law books. And, you know, a lot of these cases, illegal cases, the one that always struck me was called Trump versus Dulles, which dealt with this statement called the evolving standards of decency that mark, an evolving humane society. And it was a prison case. And it's saying that we can't just be stuck back there in the ancient times with respect to, how we deal with the people who are incarcerated. We must evolve as civilization evolves. And what you're talking about, healthcare and what my sister is talking about, all these things are very much interconnected. So go on, he brought on down to Unity Healthcare. So I just wanted to stick that in for a moment. So go on, my sister.
Kiana, so what's your take on this Unity Healthcare and the situation and the crisis over the D.C. jail with the 32 deaths and the staff, the medical staff from Unity Care are talking about leaving? 22 have resigned since January of this year. What is it that you and Harriet's Dreams are doing to address this particular issue? Because it's tied in, it's correlated to the deaths in medical.
Well, we have not. We're still working with the deaths, and we've been working with the deaths for the last 3 years and following those loved ones in cases for the last 3 years. But we will take a look, and if anybody is listening that knows anyone who's had any particular health issues at the jail that want to reach out to Harriet's Wildest Dreams, please do so. You can reach out to us on social media And we can support you, but we haven't had anyone from the community reach out to us about that because we are the pulse of the community. And when folks reach out to us, that's where we get our campaigns and our projects from. And so if folks want to reach out, we will definitely be able to go through and support you with that. But what I want to say, one key word here about Medicaid and inside of the prison is fundamental. It is foundational and it's systemic, right? Because it's what's happening at DC jail is happening at Upper Marlboro. What's happening at Upper Marlboro is happening at Alexandria Detention Center. It's by design that those medical care is substandard, right? That we don't have proper contracts and care for folks who are incarcerated because, again, why would you ensure that property has proper medical care? It starts with that. We're not considered to be human beings once we're being held in custody. We're considered to be property. So, that's why it's so hard to prove cruel and unusual punishment because, it's a very hard standard to reach because they feel as though people are not people inside of prisons. They're property. And so I think that we need to start there with the repealing a lot of information that came to us through the Prisoners with Litigation Act that has held a lot of us. A lot of folks who are being incarcerated, they can't go through the remedy process to be able to fight that. And that's another thing is that once you get out, it's hard to fight it because it's now a moot point. So you have to fight it while you're on the inside, and being on the inside and trying to get your grievances and your remedies all the way up to the top can be proven to be a very hard thing to do.
Impossible.
Yeah.
And what's so ironic is it states that is the main place or the one place where that is your right to have medical care, and it's sorely lacking.
Yeah, I've seen in Upper Marlboro, I wasn't at DC jail during my incarceration, but I've seen when you ask for a white shirt and you ask for a grievance, I've seen them take hours, two shifts go by, you still haven't gotten your grievance form. And it's being withheld from you as a punishment or as retaliation. So it's very hard on the inside. And what I don't want to have happen as we are advocating for our loved ones, as Harriet's Wildest Dreams are as advocating for our loved ones, is I don't want the knee-jerk reaction of the government to then shut down visits and shut, because they have a tendency that when folks start to speak out about what's going on inside of prisons, they just
That's right.
You know what I mean? A lot of retaliation. And so we have to be really careful and mindful as we're advocating for our loved ones on the inside that we're not cutting off their liberty and the little bit of liberty that they have on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is WPFW-FM, your station for jazz and justice. WPFW 89.3 Pacifica Radio.
And thank you. And thank you, my beautiful wife. We're going to open up the phones for folks who wish to call in. The phone number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. We got our first caller on for Kiana Johnson. You're on the air, please. Question or comment? You're on the air.
This is a comment from Rick calling long distance from the nation of Germany.
Well, how did I know you always our first caller from Germany, Rick? Gesundheit to you, man.
I want to make this quick. I want to say to your lady guest that the Constitution is wonderful on paper, but rarely is it enforced. I was poisoned by my government there in America in 2003 with intestinal parasites. The Secret Services working for the government, and they have left me undiagnosed with these parasites between America and Germany for 21 years. If I come back to the United States, I will be put in prison or left homeless and without the drugs that my wife is giving me to keep me alive. This government there in America intends to punish the poor with prison and with a lack of medical care and with a lack of guidelines on what is good food there in America. They intend to see the poor stay poor. I'm done.
Thank you, Rick. Hey, ma'am, thank you for calling in and listening to the show over in Germany, and we appreciate you every month. This is our first call in to Keisha. He stays on the phone for a half hour to make sure we get him.
We'll take I know. He calls into my show, too. Yeah.
Our next caller, please. Question or comment? You're on the air.
Hello, my name is Mr. Cuff. Do you remember me?
Sure, yeah. I remember you, Mr. Cuff.
I came to your radio fund in 2016 trying to plead my son's case.
Yes, well, I remember. Yes.
It's been 8 years, and all of the stuff that they're talking about in the prisons, I've got firsthand information because I've been, you know, involved with my son all of these 8 years. And I'm going to tell you, the corruption in the prisons runs deeper than the ocean. I mean, I could write a book on the things that he has gone through, how they have set him up just for being outspoken and trying to get the inmates to have some sense of understanding what their rights are in there.
They, I mean, is your son home yet? Is he home?
No, he's not home yet. And when he comes home, he's got to face a mountain of probation and be registered as a sex offender, and he didn't even rape nobody.
Yeah.
Now, when my daughter got murdered in 2019, we had decided, since they wouldn't let him come home for the funeral, that we set up, we would let him know when her services was so he could talk to her through the phone. Well, when they, you know, they listened. So what they did on the day of her service, they decided to ship him from Augusta County all the way over to St. Bride's from the west coast of Virginia to the east coast just to make sure that he wouldn't be able to talk at his service. And when he got to St. Bride's, they set him up, gave him charges that he didn't do. They wouldn't look at the film to see that the other guy jumped him first, and then they sent him, now he's in the worst prison in the state of Virginia.
From a Which one is he in?
He's at Suffolk 1.
Suffolk 1. Okay, and how long has he been in?
He's been in since 2015.
I remember the case. You call quite often.
Yeah.
I remember the case. Yes.
I've been fighting, trying to get somebody just to look at his case. The reason being because my daughter, who was murdered by the doctors in a hospital, we got proof. We proved it. She had quit her job at Homeland Security to go back to get her law degree because she was going to fight for her brother because she saw the circus that was happening in the court in Virginia. Then she got murdered.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow.
So, I can tell you, if you could get my son on the phone, he would tell you about
I know, man. I know, Brother Cuff. I know, man. I know what you've been going through. We all know it. It's just like we've been doing this show for 16 years, and things just get worse and worse, and the situation doesn't seem to be improving or getting better, but we still talk about these situations, hoping that somebody can hear and do something to bring about a change.
The people out there that run these innocence programs and have these firms that do this kind of work, they all need to come together as one because a closed fist is more powerful than open fingers.
Oh, hey.
What's happening now. Good meeting all over the city. Because we know it's up to us to make the change. It's not going to happen otherwise.
You said a mouthful. We've been meeting with groups all over the city, 20, 30, 40 organizations, Monday nights, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, trying to get people together to see if we can come together and unite. Because like you say, a closed fist is more effective than an open hand. And we can something. So it takes more people to get involved. And I want to thank you for calling in, man. And I wish you luck with your son. Because I know you've been calling in for years, man.
He's got one more year before he come out. God willing, they don't set him up because, you know, what he does in there, he has embraced the Islamic faith. And he has learned it. Even now, learned how to speak Islam. He learned how to speak French. And what he's doing, he's trying to get the brothers in the prison to understand that they're not just pieces of meat in there.
Yeah. And that's a hard job, brother, because I did 30 years and 4 months on an installment plan. And every time I went in, I worked in the law library, I tried to get guys together, and they would talk stuff. Most of the guys, in fact, I was surprised that a lot of the guys couldn't read or write.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're trying to educate somebody and let them know what their rights are, and they can't even read it if you put them in front of them. So it's a lot of work that need to go down to bring everybody around, man, to make sure we can stop this, because it's just happening to us, man. And it ain't right.
Yep.
I want to thank you for calling in, partner, and stay in touch. And when your son do come out, let us know beforehand so we can hook you all up to some agencies who might be able to provide whatever support you need when you come out. Okay?
All right. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
And thank you, man. We appreciate you.
All right.
We're getting close to that time, and it's we got another call on. Well, you're a popular young lady, Kiana. People like you. They want to hear some more Jiggy Boogie. Come on, you're on the air. Question or comment?
Good morning. Good morning, Papa Roach, Mama Mertine. How y'all doing? This is Ian Simpson here.
Hey, where you been at, you turkey? Where you been?
Hey, putting out hellfire one fistful of sand at a time, man.
Okay.
Yes,
yes. Good answer, man.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Hey, I just wanted, because I heard Brother Cuff, you know, I did time with his son over in Alexandria. I know him well enough to know the backstory that they play dirty in Virginia, man. They play too damn dirty in Virginia. And that boy should get they should either reconvene and, you know, revisit his case, because they didn't have all they stuff together. But when you get guys behind the wall, like the sister Kiana said, when they pre-trial, you know, it's so much going on through a inmate's head, you know. Hey, damn, how much, they throwing football numbers at people these days. So it's so much, and he shouldn't have took that deal, man. He had a chance. He had a chance, but the prosecution is dirty in Alexandria. I know that for a fact. I'm living proof.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a good hand from you. You've been doing okay, man?
Yeah. Yes, sir. You know, still working with the veterans community, helping house homeless veterans and get veterans jobs. So
thank you.
And I just want to say to all the listeners, y'all listening to a good show. Papa Roach Brown is a good man. I came straight to him when I came home.
And Merry Christmas to you, Turkey.
Merry Christmas, Job Turkey.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Ian. Stay safe, man, and stay in touch. Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, Keanu, what is Harriet's Responders? I read in your paper y'all have a community defense called Harriet's Responders. Explain what is Harriet's Responders.
Harriet's Responders is our group of folks, volunteers, and members of the team who go out into the community as soon as something happens. Right, we go right into to the scene of wherever the incident or the harm is being caused. A lot of the times, you'll see us at visuals, or you'll see us responding to when someone is killed in community by a police officer or intercommunity violence. We support the families in being able to navigate that system so that they get some type of relief and support as they go through one of the worst times of their lives, is usually through, when someone loses someone. Or you'll see us at protest. Harry's Responders was out over the weekend at the protest at the White House. You'll see us on the front line. So that's our front line. Folks on the front lines are our Harry's Responders.
Mm. You know, this is amazing. How do you find out when something happens? Somebody gets shot in one part of the city. Who notifies you to let you know that here's a situation and you need to be present?
Usually we get notified by the family. Either the family will contact us. Like, I don't know how folks get, but we will get a contact or inbox from a family member because they know that's what we do. And they know that is what Harris Waters Dreams is around for. And so we usually get it directly from someone in the community, like, oh, this happened to my loved one or my cousin's cousins. And, you know, can you support them? And so the community, again, we are the pulse of the community at Harris Waters Dreams. So, you know, as soon as things happen, we're notified from and by the community.
Are you getting any pushback from anybody to say that, tell y'all get off the way, back up, we don't want you here? Are you getting any pushback?
Always get pushback, you know, when we always get pushback, particularly from folks who don't understand what it is to be abolitionist. We automatically get pushback. You know, folks don't understand that how could you support individuals who are locked up? How could you support individuals who may be, alleged of committing a crime? Well, first and foremost, we don't believe in crime at Harriet's Wildest Dreams. We know that it's harm that people cause one to another, and that harm.
Oh, I like that. Say that again. Say that again, would you?
We don't believe in crime. Crime is make believe. We know that there's harms that happen in our community and that, you know, need to be rectified and restored. But crimes are things that's made up by people with power to keep their power, period.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
So we have a unique approach to that. And so folks automatically push back because they think we're some type of crazy people that just want to open up all the doors to the prison and let everybody out. And so they don't have an understanding or take the time to learn what it is that we do. So that's why we have a lot of public, a lot of political education that happens online. So if you want to check out some of our, you know, political workshops to understand how we combat the harms in our community. And first it starts with making sure that people have what they need. They have food, you know, they were trying to cut back food stamps a couple of months ago.
Yes.
You know, get to a place of safety if people hungry and they trying to eat. You know, literally groceries are $300, $400, $500 for 2 weeks of groceries. And so we're taking things out away from our people and expecting them to just continue on business as normal. And that's not what we believe in Harriet's Wildest Dreams.
You know, that's amazing, because we looked at something last week and we talked about that the D.C. government spent $59 million on housing the homeless, I mean, the migrants. And they got a budget that just came out last week from the mayor's office, $1.7 million for homelessness. And yet they spent $59 million to house and relocate the migrants. And everybody gets a help, get help and assistance except those folk who really need it. And it really hurts. So for those folk who are listening to you and what you were saying, how can they contact Harriet's Wildest Dreams and you, and what can they do to get involved? Because, again, we need all hands on deck.
More importantly than that, our government is sending over money to folks to fuel war.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, and so I can't not mention that in this moment where we are, you know, our country is sending over our tax dollars unsolicited by people who have to pay taxes, right, without representation here in D.C. for that money to go over and to fuel and fund war. So I just wanted to really talk about that and to make that mention as we move forward. We're in a very peculiar time right now with our country being at war and our Palestinian brothers and sisters not, you know, being genocide happening and our money and our tax dollars fueling that, when we could be giving, you know, we could put a whole family up in a home with food and a car.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, Nelson Mandela, before he died, he was asked on one of his programs, why did he communicate with Yasser Arafat, the chairman of the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization? And Nelson Mandela said, well, he was in Robben's prison. He got communications and letters from Yasser Arafat, and that the apartheid that they were experiencing in South Africa, he said that they were experiencing the same type of apartheid in Palestine or in Gaza, you know. And Mandela said, because somebody's your enemy, don't make him my enemy. And Yasser Arafat supported the Palestinians and their right to gain their freedom. And I'm telling you right now, it hurts. I don't look at the news no more. Because it hurts when you see these little babies and kids. They killed 35,000 folk that killed in 90 days in Palestine. They're talking about a war. How in the hell is a war? And you're the only one with airplanes and tanks. They don't have no airplanes or tanks. They got rocks, bottles, chairs, and sticks, and a few little pistols. But you got jet fighters, sophisticated technological weaponry. And these folks, and you acknowledge, you look at the picture, they destroyed the whole country. There's no building standing. And I get tired of looking at little babies. And this little 8-year-old girl said, will I ever get my arm back? They blew her arm off, and she didn't know that she'd never get it back. When you see this kind of hurt and pain and torture, it ain't right. I don't care about the Palestinians and Israel. It's about law. It's about kids. You don't hurt babies. You save babies. I will protect the Ku Klux Klan babies, because kids are kids. They are not responsible for all the foolishness and the jiggy boogie that we put everybody through.
That jiggy boogie word. That jiggy boogie, absolutely. And one thing my grandmother would tell me as a Guyanese woman, she would tell me when I was coming up, is what's going on over there is going on over here.
Yes.
Us. And so ways that you can get involved in any of the movements that Harriet's Wildest Dreams is a part of is, of course, following us on our website, our Mobilize, And our IG, All Else Fails, you can follow us on IG, and that's Harriet's Dreams on all platforms. And we're very responsive. Again, we are the pulse of the community, in community, with community, by community. So reach out to us so that we can be in community together.
How can the community or people listening to the show assist Harriet's wildest dreams, particularly with the deaths or with the jail, the 32 deaths or 34 at the DC jail? What can the community do to get involved in reducing this thing? Because I was over that jail, the old jail and the new jail, and I know the environment, the conditions, and I don't have to be over there to know how dirty and rotten and funky they are inside of there. So that's one of the reasons why we had very seldom we have somebody from there on the show, because I don't want to hear the pat government answer, well, this we're doing, we got a budget for this, but that's jiggy book. I don't want to hear that crap. People are dying. You know, deal with the people on the front line. You know what I mean? So you want to give your closing information out and get contact information.
Again, we have a lot of things that we do in community. We have a lot of political education online, and all you have, we post everything, all of our flyers, by going to our social media. We're really heavy on IG, Harriet's Dreams, harriet'sdreams.org for our website, so that you can follow us, because that's where, you know, ways that you can get involved with the deaths at the jail and other initiatives and projects that Harriet's Wildest Dreams are doing.
Let me throw this at you, Kiana. Because of that Estelle versus Gamble, that case that the Supreme Court ruled that everybody in prison has a constitutional right to free medical care. That's a Supreme Court decision. Is that something you can work with in terms of tie this into them 32 deaths over the jail? These men and women who died over the jail were denied medical care, whatever. Is anybody taking this on as a class action or filing an injunction against the Department of Corrections, the City Council? Some bold action need to be taken to stop continuation of these killings over the jail.
I'm with you on that, Mr. Roach. If any lawyer, we also work very closely with lawyers who want to get involved. We need a lot more lawyers to get involved and to tap in. So if you are an attorney and you're listening and you say, you know, I want to try this, or I want to be able to litigate that, or do, you know, reach out to Harriet's Wildest Dreams so that we can work together, because we have the folks on the ground, but our lawyers who are interested in seeing more about this, because again, this is an issue where the government has failed as always, and they are responsible, period. I don't care what, if I'm in your custody and something happens to me while I'm in your, if I fall on your steps at your house, I can go to your umbrella insurance and I can make a claim because I'm at your house. That's the government's house. And so if any lawyers would like to get involved, please do reach out to Harriet's Wildest Dreams.
You know, I sued the Department of Corrections back in 68 when I got hurt and injured and was paralyzed and placed in solitary. And we filed a court, went to the courts. Has any one of these 32 deaths that happened over the jail recently, has anybody filed, taking their case to court for legal action?
That's a long process, not yet, but they're working on it. And we are looking for attorneys. The most recent death, the gentleman, the father, who was very active in his son's life, he is definitely looking for an attorney. So if you're an attorney and you think outside the box, and this is something that you're interested in, reach out to Harriet's Wildest Dreams.
You know, I want to suggest this to you and Nikichi, that because of the students in law school, if their last year, they got a 6-month practicum they have to complete. What about making an arrangement with Howard, Georgetown, and these law schools, and having them law students who are doing their practicum the 6 months before they graduate work with Harriet's Wildest Dreams to provide legal assistance for those men and women over in their pretrial status? Because we know, like you said, they don't even read this. They don't know about the indictment, the remedy. I read a case, somebody pleaded guilty to 3 first-degree murders. How in the hell you get somebody to plead to 3 first-degree murders? I mean, my goodness.
So, Kiana, I can definitely connect you with Howard University School of Law, Thurgood Marshall Clinic, the Movement Lawyering Clinic, and the like. You're probably already in touch, but just in case, we should talk.
Yeah.
That should be a good one. Can I teach you? Do you have a number for Dr. Muhammad at Howard University?
Not at the tip of my fingers at this moment.
Okay.
But the person that I deal with over there is Justin Hansford, who's director at the Thurgood Marshall Center.
Okay. We want to thank you. Our time is up. We're running out of time. I want to thank you, Kiana Johnson. Lady, you are 7 minutes. You my jiggy boogie friend. You know.
Yes.
Yep. Every time you say that.
So we want to thank you for joining us, and I'll be in touch. And because we got to follow up on something else we talked about, Kiana. Okay. Thank you for joining us. Our guest this morning has been Kiana Johnson, co-founder of Harry's Wildest Dream, and of course our dynamic right hand co-host Nikisha Taifa and my wife Mertine. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next Tuesday, same time and same place. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
WPFW's 2024 election to seat members to represent you on the local station board has started. Renew your membership by making a minimum donation of $25 or completing 3 hours of eligible volunteer work by June 30th in order to be a candidate, nominate candidates, or vote. Visit elections.pacifica.org for more information or call 707-500-1910 to leave a voicemail for the election supervisor.
This is movement time, and when it's movement time, we can all be together.
Reverend Dr. William Barber.
We are here to announce on June the 29th at 10 o'clock on Pennsylvania and 3rd, we are calling for the Mass Poor People's Low-Wage Workers Assembly and Moral March on Washington and to the polls, June 29th, 2024. We're saying the last picture of D.C. ought not be people tearing the Capitol up and trying to tear democracy down. We need a picture of folk trying to build a democracy up and lift up all people, regardless of who they are. June the 29th on Pennsylvania and 3rd.
Taking Action offers listeners current information about protecting our schools and communities by interviewing leaders in public housing development and educators. We share strategies to stand up for social justice, providing a voice for the homeless and those fighting against gentrification in our city, in addition to building our power as a community by supporting local businesses and holding government officials accountable for their actions. Taking Action is produced by Empower DC. Listen every Tuesday on 89.3 FM at 1 p.m. Also available on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. On your station for jazz and justice, WPFW, Washington.
Hi, this is Tom Cole, host of G-Strings, here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW's future.
June is Caribbean American Heritage Month. Thus, CAWI, CPN, ICS, AFI, and Africa World Now Project present the 22nd DC Caribbean Film Fest, June 7th to the 12th, at AFI Silver Theater and Culture Center in downtown Silver Spring. The festival showcases the best in Caribbean cinema, with 15 films representing 10 Caribbean countries. Highlights include discussions with filmmakers and Caribbean refreshments. The DC Caribbean Film Fest, June 7th to the 12th, scheduled at afi.com/silver. or 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The DC Black Fathers Matter Project, 5th Annual Father's Day Motorcade, Saturday, June 15th. The motorcade honoring Black fathers will depart at 12 noon from the African American Civil War Museum at 1925 Vermont Avenue Northwest. Arrival is as early as 10:30 a.m. to participate. The motorcade will end at the Big Chair on Martin Luther King Avenue and V Street Southeast at approximately 1 p.m. DC residents are encouraged to display banners or posters in your neighborhood, community, or church.